I'm Kevin Kelly. This is Live and Local. And on the program today, we're representing two events, well, really a series of events in the case of the Dance for Parkinson's Disease, which is happens over the school year at the dance department at the University of Illinois, and rather interesting program that we will find out about from Kate Cooper and Whitney Hayvice coming up at around 12:30 or so. And first, we have Major Phil Shannon, who is music director of the Band of the Irish Guards, who are coming with the pipes, drums, and dancers of the Royal Regiment of Scotland, appearing twice this week in our listening area in Urbana tomorrow night at the Cranert Center, and in Springfield Thursday night at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois Springfield. That will be coming up in just a few moments. First, here are the Band of the Irish Guards in a march called the Royal British Legion. This program is called Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly, and I'm on the phone with Major Phil Shannon, who is music director for the Band of the Irish Guards, who are going to be at in our listening area twice this week, on Tuesday night at the Cranert Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana, and on Thursday night at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois Springfield, both performances at 7:30, and they are appearing with the pipes, drums, and Highland dancers of the Royal Regiment of Scotland, if I have that all right. First of all, thanks very much for joining us on the show.
Well, it's a delight to speak to you, and with a name like yours, I'm sure you've got some Irish connections somewhere along the line.
Well, the sad thing is, well, the good thing is that I probably do. The sad thing is I don't know what they are.
Well, we're meeting a lot of folks from the old country, from England, Ireland, Scotland, and Wales while we've been on tour here, and it's tremendous to see how they react to the music, because oftentimes it was some of the songs that perhaps their grandmothers or mothers used to sing to them, because we're doing a lot of traditional music in our program. So it's delightful to have that kind of reaction from them.
Well, I can tell you that neither of my grandparents, neither sets of grandparents were that close to Ireland. It's quite a mix of people in my background, but somewhere back there, certainly somebody was.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about the band tradition in Ireland as it relates to the military.
Well, we're primarily taken up with duties for Her Majesty the Queen in London, and there are five bands that serve that purpose. For many of your listeners, they will have been to perhaps see Changing the Guard at Buckingham Palace, or witnessed the state opening of Parliament, or maybe a state visit either in London or at Windsor Castle. And so the five bands, the Grenadier Guards, the Coldstream Guards, the Scots Guards, Irish Guards, and Welsh Guards, all serve to provide music for those ceremonial occasions. And the Irish Guards was formed in 1900, which is a lot more junior to ones like the Grenadier Guards, who were formed in the 1600s. But so we're quite new on the scene as far as that goes. But Queen Victoria set out to establish Irish Guards because of the work that the Irish regiments had done in the South African Wars, the Boer Wars, at the end of the 1800s. So we've got a long distinguished history so far. And would you believe it, I'm the first Irish director of music that they've ever had in 110 years. So it's taken them a wee bit of time to get around to that.
Yeah, that's to their embarrassment, I should think. But actually, you know, maybe I asked the question wrong, too. My own ignorance about how things work, I asked the band tradition in Ireland, but this is really an English band? Help me out here.
Essentially, the band is, but we're obviously linked to the regiment, the Irish Guards regiment, and they primarily recruit from both North and Southern Ireland. So whereas in the bands, we as musicians tend to move around among the 22 bands in the British Isles, the regiment is primarily made up of Irishmen. So when I talk to the gentlemen and ladies in the band, they're mostly from England or Scotland or somewhere like that. And when I talk to members of the regiment, who are the fighting element of the battalion, they mostly speak with the same tongue as I do.
So, but there is no animosity between the regiment and the band.
Absolutely not. No. I mean, they do the element whereby they will go to far-flung places like Afghanistan and serve alongside our American counterparts out there. But as regards to the band, then we're kind of separate, but we do a separate job for Her Majesty in London.
So regarding the other group that you're with, the pipes and drums and so on of the Royal Regiment of Scotland, tell me a little bit about their background, and they seem to operate differently.
Yes, they do, actually, and it's quite interesting because these are real soldiers. I mean, we're all soldiers, but these are guys who literally go to the front line and have not long returned from Afghanistan and go back out again later on this year. But their music is more a secondary part of what they do. So they do the bagpiping, drumming, and the Highland dancing. I mean, they're extremely good at it, to be able to do it part-time. But, of course, there's a tremendous tradition in Scotland of those literal traditional instruments being played, like the bagpipes. So, they're really music part-time, whereas we're music 99.9% of the time.
So they're essentially fighting or serving in a fighting situation.
Yes, frontline capacity, yeah.
And yet they do find occasion while they're in that situation to also play and dance and so on.
Yes, they do, actually. Always take their bagpipes with them. Whether it's to scare people around, I don't know. No, I only jest. There's a great sort of synergy between us full-time musicians and the other ones who are part-time. When you hear them, you would never think that they were part-time. Actually, they're extremely good. They're actually Army champion pipers and drummers. So we're very privileged to have them on the tour with us.
And I see that they're sort of a combination of groups, military groups originally, and the 91st Highlanders formed under the dreaded King George III,
yes.
Dreaded, of course, here in America, from our Revolutionary War days.
Yes.
1794.
Mm-hmm.
But then combined with another group. Do you say it Argyll? Or
yes, the Argyll.
And
yes,
Sutherland.
The Sutherland Highlanders, yes. We've met some people with the name Argyll and some people with the name Sutherland since we've been over here, so they have got true connections, that's for sure.
So.
But yes, like your own forces over here, we have been we were formed really through county regiments, through local people getting together and joining a local regiment. Many of them went through, especially in the First World War, and fought together. And as the squeeze has been on budgets and the need to centralize more, these regiments have become amalgamated and eventually become what we know now as the Royal Regiment of Scotland. But they still retain that sense of name within one of their companies. So the Argyll and Sutherland Highlanders are still very much a part of all that goes on within the Royal Regiment of Scotland.
Major Philip Shannon, who is music director of the Band of the Irish Guards from Great Britain, who are going to be at the Krannert Center in Urbana tomorrow night and at Sangamon Auditorium in Springfield on Thursday night. And here are the Band of the Irish Guards from their disc called Marches of the Two World Wars. This one is called The Flying Fortress March by Irwin Van Cortland here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Flying Fortress March of Irwin Van Cortland, played by the Band of the Irish Guards here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, who are appearing with the Scottish Highlanders on Tuesday in the Krannert Center in Urbana and Thursday at Sangam Auditorium in Springfield. Continuing now our conversation with their music director, Major Philip Shannon. The program that you're bringing to both of our locations here, Urbana and Springfield, seems to go back and forth between the band and the Highlanders.
Yes, it does indeed. Yeah, we like to break the program up. Sometimes we're by ourselves because we find that people who have seen something like Changing of the Guard want to see a little bit of the pomp and pageantry that we bring to British society. So we will do maybe a set by the band themselves, and then the bagpipes and drummers will come on and do a set themselves, and a little bit of dancing, a little bit of drum special work as well. And then, of course, we'll join together and feature some of the soloists. So it's a real amalgam of all those areas in the British Isles that have such a cultural heritage all of their own. And so it's all those different types of music that we'll actually be giving the audience.
Well, you have, I'm looking at the program here for Urbana anyway, and I imagine it's the same as Springfield. You have the opening muster and a final muster and march off, and then you have the Changing of the Guard, which I gather is music that you would use in that situation.
Yes, absolutely right. Yeah. This is the kind of music that we would play for such an occasion. And people, I don't know, when we perform in London, we have anything up to, over 5,000 people a time at the Palace, so I think many symphony orchestras would struggle actually every time they went out to attract audiences of 5,000 odd. So that's the kind of goldfish bowl that we work in. And not only do we work outside Buckingham Palace, but of course as musicians we work inside and work very, very closely with Her Majesty, and often get the opportunity to meet kings, queens, presidents, and foreign dignitaries as well. And the Queen will actually introduce us personally in the lineup to whatever visiting monarch or president is coming along. So it's a tremendously privileged position to be in.
Yeah, I would think so. I have never seen the Changing of the Guard at any of those locations, although I've seen sort of pictures of them and probably television clips and so on.
Yeah.
Have you participated in anything like that? Not as a musician?
No, always as a musician. I joined the army as a musician at 15, in the days when you could join at 15, and have done music all my life. And I've gone around the world I don't know how many times doing this, and again, often working with our American counterparts. Your great military bands that you have over here, tremendous tradition of playing with groups like the President's Own, right through to your field army bands out serving in places like Korea and way over in the western side in Seattle. So it's always been music, and music is such a goodwill ambassador by itself that we often find, even in conflict zones like Bosnia and in Northern Ireland in years gone by, the music actually has the power to draw both sides together, and they will sit in a concert together and be very friendly to each other, which gives the wheels of diplomacy an opportunity to work when the band has left.
Do I remember reading that this is your first tour of the United States?
Well, it's the first coast-to-coast, actually. I think we were last here as a band. We've popped back and forth a number of times, open exhibitions and things like that. But the last real tour was in about 1954, and that was only a short tour up to Canada and doing some of the American cities. But here, we're giving about 64 performances, everything from the eastern side down through the center, down to Phoenix, up to Las Vegas, San Diego, back to New York, and finish off in Florida on the 26th of March. So we're seeing a lot of your country from the inside of a bus.
and for much of the country, not necessarily at the best time of year.
Well, not really, but what we find is actually that people make up for it. People have been so, so friendly towards us here. And we tend to go out in the early part when people are coming into the theatre. We chat to them and give them an opportunity to take pictures and see the uniforms and just chat generally about the kind of things we do. And that really makes up for any snow that we might have seen or for any cold weather that we have to put up with.
How does this compare with weather you're accustomed to?
Well, it's usually a bit warmer in the UK, although we did have problems getting out of UK because our flight was cancelled. So we had to switch airports at the very last moment and did make it here just on time. But we wouldn't have as long or a sustained cold weather as perhaps you have over here.
Well, it's at least in our neck of the woods, it's been a little colder than usual, I think, and more snow than usual for particularly the East Coast. I see you're kind enough to play the Star Spangled Banner on this program.
Oh, yes.
And at least one Sousa March.
Yeah. The music is, well, that's it's the title is actually called Hands Across the Sea, which is the theme of the tour. And because we've got so many links with your wonderful country here, we don't want to play all American stuff because people want to come and see and hear us play music from the old country, as many of them call it.
Major Phil Shannon, music director of the Band of the Irish Guards, going to be in Urbana on Tuesday and Springfield on Thursday. And although this next music is not their performance, it's of the sort that he'll be talking about a bit more in just a moment as we continue our conversation, as there's lots of Irish and Scottish traditional music on the program. Here is the rather famous Irish band called the Chieftains. This is a double jig, O'Mahony's Frolics on Live and Local. The Chieftains in a double jig called O'Mahony's Frolics, and sorry about that. Support for our program today on FM 90.9 comes from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of foods from around the world, including cheeses, olives, spices, hot sauces, olive oils, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio. Continuing now with the remaining portion of the interview I did earlier today on the telephone with Major Phil Shannon, music director for the Band of the Irish Guards, coming to the Krannert Center Tuesday and Sangamon Auditorium in Springfield on Thursday. The Irish portion of the program, the traditional portion of the program, which is actually a good most of it, is this the sort of thing you would do a great deal in your normal performances, or use some of this special for the tour?
Well, we have geared the program specially for the tour, but we would do something. The thing is, our music and our work is so varied. Not only is it just simply changing the guard, but we do so many other things. We do workshops with the young people. We do concerts. We do tours within the UK and all the other state ceremonial music. That there will be a point at some time during any of those performances when we would feel that a piece of music would be appropriate. And sometimes it's rather, I would suppose you could say, rather pompous ceremonial music, maybe in the background to somebody who's inspecting troops or a diplomatic visit or something like that. But other times we would play a rather light-hearted music for maybe the troops themselves, or if we were out in a concert, people want to hear traditional Irish music, so we have a fiddle player in the band, and so he'll get up and actually play a little bit of Irish music that will get their feet tapping.
So this is all as popular in England
as it is
here.
Yeah, I think things like Lord of the Dance and River Dance have popularized Irish music, and some of our music is in that vein. And when you take something like the Irish Washerwoman, it's an old traditional tune, and we dress it up and we put the pipes in and make a bit more of a spectacle of it. But it's all good fun.
Well, speaking of spectacle, why don't you give us an idea of what it all is going to look like?
Well, we play on all types of different stages and stadiums, so the program that we have must work on the smallest stage and the largest stadium. So that's been quite a challenge to not only choose the music that's going to fit the movements, but music that can expand and the movements that can expand when we do large arenas. But what people will see, as well as hear, is actually a lot of movement on stage. We try and keep the show flowing right through from the very beginning. It's rather official to begin with because we play the anthems together. And then we go into the pipe sets, and there's marching, there's music at all times. So, you know, there is something to feast the eye on as well as the ear.
And always pipes and drums are themselves very festive just to look at in the motion of the
rhythm. Oh, yes, yeah. People are fascinated. Somebody said to me last week, I thought you had to blow into the piper's bag and then he squeezed it with his arm. I couldn't see that happening. Was he doing it? I said, yes, he was. But it's not something which is easily detectable from a distance. They make it look very easy, but actually playing the bagpipes is extremely difficult.
I had on this program some time ago Paddy Keenan, who plays the small pipes.
Oh, yes.
The Illan pipes. And you actually get a much better idea watching that.
You do,
Because he's very obviously not blowing at anything.
That's right. A lot more visual, really, as far as that's concerned. But certainly when you blow the Scottish bagpipes, as our gentlemen have it, well, they're pretty loud, and they take a great deal of effort, but they make it look effortless.
And how about the dancers? Is this the river dance type dancing,
well,
or
no,
something very different?
It's more just traditional Scottish dancing. The Scottish dancing would dance jigs, reels, Highland fling, Argyle broadswords, and things like that. So it's we actually carry six along with us dancers. And they will—they're soldiers, you know, who again are pipers and drummers, and they learn dancing as part of the cultural heritage of Scotland. So, the traditions are carried on throughout the British Army in things like the piping, drumming, and the dancing as well. And so, yep, they're frontline soldiers too. You would never think of it, seeing them skipping about on their feet, but they can do it extremely well.
So they could. I wonder if their soldiering is affected by their dancing.
Well, what we find is things like this draw together teamwork, because you know you can't do one of the drum flourishes that they do, which is quite spectacular actually, without this sense of really, really relying on the person next to you, left and right, and this sense of teamwork together, and that's essentially what serving in the military is all about. It's a great team business. And all people who serve, not only on the musical side, but in the infantry or the other soldiering side, talk about what the tremendous sense of camaraderie that there is working in that close-knit team.
I was on your website briefly, and I noticed it's quite prominent that you offer yourselves out for hire.
That's right.
In all sorts of forms,
mm-hmm.
formats.
We have been hired by billionaires, to people who just simply want a concert, to promoters. Of course, this has all got to fit around our own first frontline military work. So a lot of it's in the evening. And certainly when we do concerts, most of them these days are for military charities in the UK. But occasionally you'll get a company who perhaps wants to launch a new product and he wants to have a fanfare to begin with, and a little bit of spectacle, smoke lights, and people dressed up in very smart uniforms playing music. And, of course, with the discipline side of how we do things, they know that we're going to deliver on time when they want it. So everything from Ford tractor cabs to ships, I think we've launched in the past. So quite a variety.
You have a salon orchestra and a dance band as well.
That's right, yeah. The salon orchestra really plays for most of what was on inside Buckingham Palace, because obviously if the Queen is hosting a dinner with the heads of the diplomatic service, or maybe a state banquet where you've got lots of dignitaries and perhaps a foreign king or queen, then you want quiet, subtle music in the background. So a lot of our players are double-hatted. They play two instruments. And some of them are string players, so we will form a little string ensemble with single woodwind and piano to provide music for those kind of occasions. And those are the times when you see from the minstrels' gallery the Queen interacting with the head of government, head of state, whoever it is. A very spectacular setting because of how wonderful it looks. Certainly the last one we did at Windsor Castle, there were 170 odd people around one single table. Well, it was lots of tables, but one long table right down the center of the great hall within Windsor Castle. And just seeing the table settings themselves is a real spectacle, because everything's measured out with a ruler.
I'm sure it is.
It just looks wonderful.
But you're not bringing any of the string players here,
yes,
or are you?
Yes, we'll be having some of our string players play in a little Cayley band, which we play some traditional Irish music. And our other solo fiddle player will be doing some solo stuff with the band as well.
Well, this show sounds like an absolute blast, and I'm just looking at it spread across three pages here. There's 13 segments with, I can't even count the number of tunes.
Yeah, quite a few. I would have to go back and count. But there's something for everybody. We find even children just enjoy seeing it. They enjoy seeing the sword I carry as well. I usually show that to them. But they just enjoy all the musical side. To those right through who have served, a lot of them who have served in Korea and Vietnam in recent years, as well as Iraq and Afghanistan. And we do a forces tribute to those gentlemen and ladies of your services over here. And they have the opportunity to stand and are very proud to do so. So a great round of applause to all those who take part there.
Earlier you mentioned the dancers doing a dance called a broadsword, and I wondered that since they are actually soldiers, will they be brandishing broadswords while dancing? And do we need to get out of the way?
Oh, no. You're quite safe. They have to, usually it's called a sword dance. You have two swords, and you put them down forming a cross, and the intricate movements are over the swords on the floor, and I've been watching it from the wings every night, and I still can't follow quite what they do, but it's very entertaining to see.
But no flinging swords about and risking the life of
audience, right? Absolutely not. No.
Well, it sounds like a great show, and I appreciate very much your taking the time to talk with us.
Well, thank you very much for the invitation. It's been wonderful to chat to you. Thank you.
Major Phil Shannon is music director for the Band of the Irish Guards, who are coming with the pipes, drums, and dancers of the Royal Regiment of Scotland to two locations in our listening area this week. Tuesday night, they'll be at the Cranert Centre in Urbana at 7:30, and Thursday night, they will be at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois Springfield, also that program at 7:30. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. That's Rodgers and Hart's My Funny Valentine, played here by Yehudi Menuhin and Stefan Grappelli, violins with a combo on Live and Local on FM 90.9. And that actually does pertain to our next conversation on the program, which will be with Kate Cooper and Whitney Hayvice, both of them involved in a series of programs called Dance for Parkinson's Disease, the Cranert Center, sponsored by co-sponsored by the Mark Morris Dance Group and the Parkinson's Disease Support Group, Carl Clinic, Dance at Illinois, and Cranert Center. And it's sort of a fascinating concept to me, and I hope to you, and we'll find out about it in a matter of moments. First, however, let me run down a few other events that you can participate in our local area. Most of these on my list happen to be Champaign-Urbana. Please let us know about events that I don't seem to know about by writing to me at willcalendar@illinois.edu, willcalendar@illinois.edu. In Urbana tonight at the Iron Post, it's the MRS Trio and a jazz jam. That's 7 o'clock tonight. There are a series of events featuring American roots vocalist Tim Ellickson at Allen Hall on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana. Tonight's program is called Make a Noise. It's an early American vocal workshop. That's at 7 o'clock. Tomorrow night, his program called American Punk and Folk, Kissing Cousins or Bitter Enemies. That's also at 7 o'clock tomorrow night. He's doing a songwriting workshop Wednesday night and then his own program, concert, Thursday night. And we hope to have him on this program sometime during this coming week. By the way, weather permitting, on tomorrow's program, we will have a Karen Lynn Deal for the hour with us. She is music director of the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, which is playing this weekend in Bloomington and Springfield. Speaking of Springfield, Tuesday night, Shen Yun is the name of a program of classical Chinese music and dance at Sangamon Auditorium. That's 7:30 Tuesday night. Kate Cooper is involved with the dance program at the University of Illinois, and specifically for the course purposes of this conversation, involved in this Dance for Parkinson's Disease series of events, the next one of which is this Friday at 10 o'clock in the morning. And she's brought Whitney Haybeis with her here on Live and Local. Thank you both for coming in on the show today.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So, Kate, fill me in. What's this all about? I have the description here, but I'm not sure what it all means.
Well, I'm going to pass it over to Whitney. Whitney and I were talking before we came in, and I suggested that Whitney tell about what happens before you get to the room itself, and that I talk about what happens once you're in the room.
There you go.
Well, the Dance for Parkinson's project was actually started by the Mark Morris Dance Group. They started this program with the Brooklyn Parkinson Group in their home base in Brooklyn. And Mark Morris comes to Cranert every year. They do about a week-long residency here when they are here in town. And every year they brought their Dance for Parkinson's program with them and did basically a yearly class with the Unity Parkinson Support Group out of Carl Clinic. And it was such a popular thing that they worked with Jenny Goles, our former engagement assistant, to kind of develop this program to turn into a monthly class here for the Champaign-Urbana community. And so from there, we teamed up with Dance at Illinois program, and that's where Kate and Marianne came into the picture.
And Marianne is?
Marianne Jarvie. She is the other instructor for the Dance for Parkinson's program, and they went out to California, were trained by David and John, who are the Mark Morris Dance Group company members who kind of started this program, and from there came back home, and we started doing these monthly classes. And they've just been a great, great thing for the Parkinson's community here, I think.
And did it just start this fall?
They did. They started, the first class was in November, and we have monthly classes coming up. Like you mentioned, this Friday, February 12th, also in March, we're going to have a class with hopefully John and David here from the Mark Morris Dance Group while they're here for their residency.
That's the first week of March.
Yes, it is. And we'll also have one April 16th and May 21st.
So basically one a month.
Yes.
And who can come to these things?
Anyone can come. You don't need to be a member specifically of any sort of Parkinson's group. And it's also not just for people who have Parkinson's. If you have any sort of mobility issues, they're open to anyone. It's just open class, just come in. If you don't feel comfortable participating right away, you just kind of want to sit and kind of get the lay of the land, that's perfectly fine too. It's just really free and open to anyone.
And it's in the dance studio at the Cranert Center.
Yes. It's downstairs in the second level, which can be a little confusing if you go down into the lower level of Cranert.
Actually, but very confusing.
But there are stanchions with signs that say the class name on it. If you just follow that, you can get down to our room, which is drama rehearsal room. And it's a large space with kind of a marley floor. So it's comfortable to work in soft shoes or in socks as well. We also invite people who are caregivers for people with mobility, stability, and rigidity issues, which are often symptoms of Parkinson's, and family members as well. So it's kind of a nice, happy thing. In the first class that we gave, some of the people who came were a little reluctant, and they weren't really dressed for it. And then the next time they came, very well-dressed, wearing loose, comfortable clothes, kind of like workout clothes, and gym shoes, which seems to be a really nice thing. And it's also nice to dress in layers because once we start moving, you might want to take off a top and have something like a short-sleeved garment underneath that.
How did you get involved in this thing?
Well, last year in March when John and David came, there was kind of an open call to people who were interested to come and see the class. I did not understand at that time that this was going to lead to an opportunity. I came, and so did Marianne Jarvie, who has been working with me also in my Creative Dance for Children program. And we recognized immediately that the work that John and David was doing was very similar to what we were already doing in creative movement, that it was about the aesthetic experience of dance, joy, that kind of thing. So once we got involved and went out to the Berkeley-Oakland area for training, we saw that it was a really great fit. We got a lot of wonderful ideas about formatting the class, and we came back and we were ready to apply it right away.
Before you actually describe some of what happens, tell me a little bit about your background that drew you to this.
Well, I've been doing a lot of things with educational outreach since 1982, when I first began as a teaching artist working in schools in Illinois. Everything I do at the university is education outreach. I have a lecture demonstration program, The Tours to Schools, that this year is teaching about postmodern dance. I direct the Creative Dance for Children program that has a Saturday lab for children ages 4 through 10.
Is that through the dance department?
It is. And similar to the Saturday school in the School of Art and Design, it's kind of like following that format. We have classes for 8 different age groups, and we generally run a 10-week fall semester and a 14-week spring semester divided into 2 7-week segments. And if anybody's interested in getting their child involved in that, they can contact the dance department for more information on that. I also do a lecture series for Osher Lifelong Learning on viewing dance, and I give a lecture on every one of the departmental concerts to help people have a framework for seeing the concerts. And lastly, I teach a Dance 100, which is a non-majors class on an introduction to contemporary dance. So I'm constantly working with people who are having first-time experiences with movement.
How often have you had the chance before to work with older people, since most people with Parkinson's are not young?
Not very much. That's true. People who have Parkinson's are generally age 55 or older. That's pretty typical for the disease. I feel in a sense that this has sort of completed the picture for me, because now I'm reaching yet one more population that's really well-suited to my skills.
So what happens when they get in the room?
Okay. Well, when they get in the room, we have it formatted so that there's a lot of activities done from a seated position. Now, keep in mind that this is an aesthetic dance class. It's not an exercise class. And that's really what differentiates it in a lot of ways from other sorts of things. We start with activities just to bring breath to the body and expressive movement to the upper body. We do activities that involve relating so that everybody has a chance to shine and interact with a partner. And after about the first 45 minutes of the class, and the class goes from 10 to 11:30, and I will add that we only dance till about 11:15, and then we leave the last 15 minutes for social time so that we have an opportunity to just engage in conversation. So in a way, we're building community too. After we finish with the seated portion, we take a short water break. Then we do something at a ballet bar. Then we do movement across the floor, and that's generally the only time when we're not either supported by a chair or directly connected to another person. And then we usually do something with a folk dance or a square dance format or a circle dance, and then we close the dance with one more relating activity that brings everybody into play. And another very special thing about this is that we have live piano accompaniment.
I'm glad you got to that, because you brought one CD along, and we've got some other music that we're trying to pull in. Tell me about this role of music. I mean, dance is virtually always to music anyway, whether it's live or not, but it's great to have somebody live doing it.
Well, I wouldn't agree that dance is always to music, being that I am from a postmodern tradition. And if you see many of the departmental concerts, you'll know that sometimes dance is done to sound or spoken word or in silence. And even to dance so that the music and the dance fit is really more of a tradition that the Mark Morris Dance Group is into. And that's really where this all comes from, because one of Mark Morris's focal points is that he likes to use live music for the dances that he creates, and he generally will bring some type of ensemble to play the music for the dance. So that is clearly one of the charges that they had in mind when they started the Dance for PD class. So this is a great opportunity for Marianne and I to have a live accompanist, because generally we don't get that when we teach our other classes. We're working with a woman named Beverly Hilmer who plays for ballet, and she's very facile. And when we plan our class, sometimes we plan from the music, and sometimes we plan from the meter, and then we sort of look for music that we might think will fit. But lately, we've been going with themes. So last month, last month, January, we didn't do anything special. But the month before, we did like Christmas and Hanukkah music. And then we realized that with February coming up, we could do something with Valentine's Day, and then like birthdays. So the reason that they all laughed is the selection for the class is because it mentions Edison, and Edison was born in February.
And they all laughed. Our next selection, we, of course, led in with My Funny Valentine, and I suppose that could have been a giveaway of what the theme was. They all laughed. Who wrote this song? Do you know offhand?
I'm always thinking Irving Berlin, but probably not.
Well, let's look because, you know, we've often been stumped. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a number of jazz groups on here, and I'll say, who wrote that tune? Say, oh, I don't know. It's just a standard. And we had this wonderful book out there that that actually answers these questions. But this is George and Ira Gershwin.
Oh, perfect.
With Fred Astaire and colleagues here on Live and Local. It's called They All Laughed.
Let's add the past laugh. Ha, ha, ha. Who's got the last laugh now?
Fred Astaire singing music by George and Ira Gershwin called They All Laughed here on Live and Local. And the sample of music that is being used in the Dance for Parkinson's Disease program, co-sponsored by, in one form or another, Mark Morris Dance Group, Unity Parkinson's Disease Support Group, Carl Clinic in Urbana and Champaign, and Dance at Illinois at the University of Illinois, as well as the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. With us on this portion of Live and Local, Kate Cooper and Whitney Hayvice, and Kate and Marianne Jarvie are largely responsible for this local rendition of the program, as well as pianist Beverly Hilmer, who plays some of this music live in the studio. Whitney, what's your role in all of this?
Well, I was kind of asked to jump on board with this past fall, and really I'm just kind of the liaison between all of the different groups involved and just help organize the class, make sure everyone has everything they need to accomplish their goals during class time, whether that's, you know, making sure water is there, making sure everyone is just comfortable with their surroundings and what's going on. And it's been a really great experience, and I feel really blessed that I was asked to be a part of it.
And you're representing the Krannert Center.
Yes.
Yeah. Kate, tell me a little bit more about here's the question I have. Parkinson's seems to take different forms in different people. My grandmother, for example, on my mother's side, mm-hmm. was diagnosed with Parkinson's, and you know, I always think of it as, you know, something where the body has some difficulty controlling itself, or you have trouble controlling the body. There are shakes and tremors and so on. And she never had any of that stuff, but she had other issues. What are some of the major manifestations, and how does this stuff, how does what you're doing help?
Okay. Well, the sort of symptoms of Parkinson's were first identified by an apothecary back in the 1800s, and scientists lately have come to understand that there's a certain area in the brain called the substantia nigra that where there's die-off. And for some reason, that die-off in that area causes a sort of a spectrum of things. Rigidity is one of them, a quickening of movement and then a slowing of movement, and a lot of stability issues. Sometimes issues with moving backwards are difficult. And in some cases, people can only move backwards with comfort but not forwards. And I think it's because the brain is so complex, it's going to manifest lots of different ways. But what everybody can get from this is when you're in motion, in some cases, there's some kind of an override so that the dancing alleviates some of the symptoms. We're approaching this physically, emotionally, and cognitively. So some of the things we'll do in class will be kind of like brain teasers through movement. And sometimes the relating activities will just create a softening of that rigidity. There's all kinds of interesting things that happen as a result of the act of moving. But we're not really trying to alleviate symptoms. We want people to have an empowering aesthetic experience together. We want people to experience the beauty of movement, that positive sense of what happens when movement and music are working together. And that unto itself has neurological effects.
And you said that, Whitney said that the classes are open to anybody really who wants to come. How many of the folks who have come so far actually have Parkinson's disease? Wild guess.
You know, I would say, just guessing, probably about half.
Mm-hmm. We have some people who are very elderly who have been brought by a friend. We have, for example, in some cases, couples where one person in the couple has Parkinson's and the other one is there to dance with them as a, you know, to enjoy the experience together. Sometimes people really have just mobility issues, not very stable on their legs, and the dancing helps them. In fact, a woman who took our first class has now been empowered by that to do other things in movement, and she's taking a Tai Chi class now, and she says she's starting to get a greater range of motion. So sometimes it just kind of sparks interest in doing more things with movement.
Do you have any sense of whether people leave the class wanting and then maybe succeeding in doing similar things for themselves between then and the next class a month later? Any idea?
Well, that's an interesting question. The Berkeley, Oakland people, when they got together and started dancing, got so excited that then they started getting together to do yoga and poetry and all kinds of other things. So there's no telling, since we're still pretty young in our process, whether or not this group's going to decide that they want to do more things, maybe other things that involve movement outside of dance.
Well, I certainly hope that this turns out to be a successful and long-term program. And it sounds rather fascinating. So if folks are free at 10 o'clock Friday morning, that is the next session of Dance for Parkinson's Disease, led by Kate Cooper and Marianne Jarvie, and performed on the piano by Beverly Hilmer, various kinds of music, which you choose how?
Good question. Well, sometimes we're just looking for something that has a certain feel. Maybe we want something more lyrical or something more up-tempo, or maybe we want something that has specific lyrics that will evoke a feeling. So, for example, one day we decided we wanted to kind of give a feeling of sort of yearning, and so we chose a song from the Fantastics, the Try to Remember song. Try to remember that one. And that just was so, I don't know, heartful. So sometimes we look for things that have heart in them.
Well, you showed me your list of music, which is pretty varied. We played, of course, some of My Funny Valentine. They All Laughed. And Daisy, Daisy, or Hello, My Baby, it says.
We can't decide which one yet.
Cockles and Muscles, which I was going to play just because of the connection with the Irish group that is going to be at the Krannert Center there tomorrow night, and lots of other things. Turkey in the Straw, that's got to be fun.
Well, obviously, that'll be for our little folk dance, square dance thing.
I would think so. Well, thank you both for coming in, Kate Cooper and Whitney Havice here on Live and Local, and I hope you have a great turnout on Friday. And if you can't make this one, the next one will be on the 5th of March, with any luck, with Mark Morris himself.
Not actually with Mark Morris, but with John and David, yes.
I was going to correct myself.
John and David are very fun. I think you'd rather be with John and David in that class.
Well, we're actually hoping to get Mark Morris on the program.
Great.
And we'll see what happens. Programs in FM 90.9 are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, presenting the Moscow State Radio Symphony Orchestra on February 25th. More information on this and other events can be found at krannertcenter.com. Our forecast is rather complicated. Winter weather advisory in effect from 6 p.m. this evening until 6 a.m. Wednesday for almost all of our listening area. We'll leave it at that. This afternoon, becoming cloudy with light snow arriving, the high 28. Tonight, cloudy with snow, accumulation of 2 to 4 inches likely by morning, the low 23. Tomorrow, periods of snow with an additional 2 to 3 inches of accumulation by evening. Blowing snow developing tomorrow afternoon, the high 26. Currently 26 degrees. This is WYNL-FM and HD Urbana. Operating translators, W293 AF Danville and W266 AF Urbana.